Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hello, good people. Welcome to episode 34 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show. Before we get into the details of the episode, I just wanted to share with you guys some of my own news, and that is that my Jiu-Jitsu membership site, The Master Academy, is almost ready. You know, I've been working on this for almost 2 years now, and it's finally at the point where I think it's going to be the product that I envisioned at the beginning. It's taken a lot of work and a lot of focus, and It's shaping up to be something really, really cool, and I'm excited to share it with you guys. I just wanted to let you know to keep an eye out. It's going to be released any day now, maybe next week or the week after. I just wanted you guys to keep in mind that you will be given a special early access deal of some sort. I haven't decided what it's going to be, but as the faithful listeners of the show that have, you guys have inspired me in so many ways with all of your feedback and just keeping in touch with me and sending me guest recommendations, and it's been fantastic, and I want to give something back to you guys, so we'll be making a special deal for you all. So keep an eye out for the Master Academy in the next couple of weeks. So this week's guest is a gentleman named Brian Jones, and he was one of those recommendations from a friend who's actually a previous guest of the show, David Riley. David said that Brian is one of the smartest people he knows, and that I should definitely have him on the show. And he has some very interesting and, I think, effective viewpoints on getting in shape and conditioning for jiu-jitsu. And I think that's something that's often neglected. You know, we had Dan Strauss, who gave us a specific viewpoint, and Brian Jones gives another complimentary one about the importance of conditioning and getting in shape and making yourself strong so that you can become the most effective grappler possible. So give the episode a listen. I'm sure you'll get some stuff out of it that's going to make you a better jiu-jitsu player. Enjoy. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I'm here with Brian Jones, who is a second degree black belt. And say the name, please, of your instructor, Brian.
Carlson Gracie Jr.
Nice. That's a pretty impressive guy to get a black belt from. Brian runs Valhalla BJJ Academy, which is honestly one of the best names I've ever heard for an academy out in Frankfort, Kentucky. So, Brian, just before we get into the interview, I just want to just preface how we got to the point where Brian is on the show. A good friend of mine who is one of the most popular guests in the last... We're approaching episode 35, and I think his episode is number 4 or 5 on the popularity list in my analytics, and that's David Riley. He's a guy who I train with out here. I teach at his gym sometimes out here in Arizona. Very cool dude. And he said to me, we were in the car a few weeks ago, and he said, look, man, you got to get this guy Brian Jones on your show. He's one of the smartest dudes I've ever met, and he's a second-degree black belt. And I was like, damn, that's saying something, because David's... He's not a stupid dude either.
I'll live up to that. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see, dude. But either way, you come with some high praise indeed. And, you know, I was looking at your bio, and one of the things I found fascinating is that you've got a huge repertoire of martial arts that you know and different styles that you've trained in. But the one that caught my eye is the Viking grappling art of Glima. And apparently you went to Iceland to train in that. Can you tell us a little bit about that trip and why you got interested in Glima and what it's about? Because I'd never even heard of it.
Yeah, that was an interesting story. I'd always wanted to go to Iceland just because I thought it was a cool country. I mean, just the fact that it's basically a really nice civilization on top of a volcano is kind of interesting in and of itself. And there's just a bunch of other reasons, architectural and everything. So I went over there and just met up with some people at, I had some mutual friends through the Straight Blast Gym with Mjolnir Academy that's over there in Iceland. And I went back in 2009. So while I was there, I've always had this sort of interest in folk sports and just different kinds of, you know, I think wrestling is one of those universals. It doesn't take somebody doesn't have to create it. It just sort of organically evolves. Like every culture has its own wrestling sport. So while I was there, I wanted to not only go over and train some jiu-jitsu, but I contacted a guy who was the national champion, Peter Atherson, and trained with him a little, did some privates, and got thrown around by his giant, huge brother and on a hardwood floor. It's pretty cool. It's just a different take on everything. So have you looked at Gleamus since you've read about it, or?
No, but I wanted to hear straight from the source. I wanted to hear all about it. I mean, I'm imagining it's kind of similar to Greco-Roman. Would that be correct?
It is. It's a really odd kind of sport, I think. It's very enclosed, so you actually wear this belt that, if you just saw it in someone's bag, you would think it's bondage gear, but it's actually a you hold on to the belt, so you can't get your hips away from the other person.
Okay.
And the whole sport is contested on a hardwood floor, no matter how big the throws are. So
Well,
you're trying to make them touch somewhere between their elbows to their head down to their knees, so they could land on their all fours, and you try to land on all fours if you can to not get knocked onto your back or your head or whatever. And so there are no weight classes or anything, and you have to do this sort of dance step, and then people just throw each other. And the idea is not to land on them, because if you land as well, then it kind of cancels out the fall. So
okay.
the falls could be a lot worse than they are, but they are pretty brutal.
Well, it sounds brutal is the word I was about to use. So I mean, you said so many things that struck chords with me. The first is about the universal nature of wrestling. I read a book by a gentleman called Marcus Trauer, called The Last Wrestlers, and I must have read this about going on 10 years ago. And that book really shaped my perception of not just jiu-jitsu but life in general. This gentleman, he started training wrestling late in life, I think after the age of 30. He was in the UK and he was struggling to find any places to teach him because wrestling is all but extinct in the UK. I mean, they don't have any Olympic presence or anything like that. Or very little presence. And so he went on this, he like embarked on this global tour to try to find the origins of wrestling and somewhere where it was still practiced in its purest form. And the book chronicles his journey to all these different countries. And as you said, almost every single country has its own indigenous grappling art. And I found that very, very stimulating and galvanizing to know that, with my involvement in jiu-jitsu, which is a form of jacket grappling, I guess you could call it, that I was involved in something that is, it's pretty ancient and it's pretty primal and just really made me feel good. So I just imagine that the Glima must have been even closer to that indigenous source, if you know what I mean.
Definitely, and it's interesting. I had the same, experience. Just sort of the thing that I find interesting about wrestling or grappling as kind of a human activity is, if you imagine, I mean, you can watch animals. They don't even have to be humans, like puppies or whatever. They just spontaneously wrestle, and it all seems to be based on, putting someone on their back. The thing that gets put on their back and pinned is the loser. And it just sort of, even at the animal kingdom and mammals, and even in like iguanas, and it's really kind of down in our lizard brain, I guess, as this wrestling. And what I've found is that it's one of the few sports where there's no technological mediation between you and what the ancient people felt, because you can't really add too many different things. Like you can't make, I mean, you can put new wrestling shoes, or you can wear a different outfit, but that you're actually physically, or not physically, but metaphysically or psychologically connected to your ancestors and everybody across the globe that's ever grabbed somebody and felt those emotions.
Wow, that's a great way
You
to put
grapple.
it. That's a great way to put it. I had this thought when you said how, if you look at any sort of like mammalian play or even iguanas when they wrestle or like fight amongst each other. It's the winner or the one who dominates is the one on top, and the one who's has to submit or loses is the one on the bottom. You know, just the thought came to me that that's what makes jiu-jitsu special, is that it's you know, the bottom guy still is in with a great chance, and that's, you get what I'm saying, like, because he's got the sweeps and the reversals, and that's kind of cool. I mean, something else I was going to say, something else I've noticed is that whenever I teach a beginner, those that have wrestling experience are infinitely better than those who don't when they start jiu-jitsu. It's night and day. And if I hypothetically speaking had like a son that I wanted to get involved in, who I wanted to prepare a path for him or a pathway to get him to become the best jiu-jitsu athlete he could be, I'd actually make him wrestle for a couple of years or maybe even 5 years first, because it's just, you know, the further I go in my own training, the more I realize that wrestling and jiu-jitsu are almost identical. I mean, there's a few key differences, but besides that, like, the principles of control are the same, the principles of movement are the same, the principles of willpower and understanding of the ego are all the same. And I think a lot of people don't give wrestling the credit it's due. There's a book many years ago where the title always stuck with me, which was The Martial Art of Wrestling. People forget that wrestling is a martial art, right?
Absolutely. I think that wrestling builds. I didn't wrestle, unfortunately. We like in the United States, it's the same, I guess, as the UK. Its own wrestling is very, very popular in some parts of the country, and then almost non-existent in other parts of the country, just depending on where you are. And I grew up in Kentucky, and there's a few places that have good wrestling programs, but it's not a major feeder for the Olympics or anything like that. But I've noticed, like you said, it's easy. You can take someone who has a wrestling background. It's like there's this fundamental base, this motion, this ability to control, this just movement and mat skills that translate directly to jiu-jitsu. And I think that the main difference is that, like coming from, because I came from judo before I did jiu-jitsu, and it's just, you're not going to your back is kind of judo in general doesn't do a lot of obviously guard work. As it's just a rules. I think it's dictated by the rules. It's a sport, so you don't want to be on your back because you can get pinned easier, and you can stand up and turtle and that kind of stuff. So it's interesting to see. The bottom game, although I'm a top game player, I think that not knowing the bottom game really limits. I like the evolution of the guard. I'm not a huge fan of like specializing in it, maybe to the exclusion of takedowns, but I think it's interesting how the rule set have allowed it to really become super intricate.
Yeah, you know, the guard, there was a point in my training where I got this idea in my head that it was almost like a poor form to pull guard. I was like, a real martial artist wouldn't like fall onto his back, you know, he'd want to stay on top. And I really made an effort to never use guard unless I really had to. And then Mauricio Gomez, Roger's dad, who's a red and white belt, if I'm not mistaken, he said to me once, he was like, yeah, that's a good attitude until you're like 35, he said. And then if jiu-jitsu is your career and you're teaching a lot, and he said, like, the guard is becomes your best friend, because you don't have to attack all the time. You can, like, if you got a big strong dude, you can kind of sit back and kind of slow him down and dictate the pace that way. And I've noticed as I get older, like, yeah, the guard has become my best friend. And there's something, you know, I have this principle I always teach my student, I try to instill in all my students. I call it the Abbott principle, which is acronym ABOT, which is always be on top. So I say to them, look, don't pull guard, because if you're pulling guard, you're trying to sweep the guy. And why are you trying to sweep the guy? Because you want to get on top. So why don't you just stay on top in the first place? But I've realized that's a cool competition mindset, but it's not the best mindset for when you're there's a huge volume of training, you need that versatility when like, damn, maybe I can't take this guy down, or maybe I'm too tired to take him down, or maybe my knee's busted up and I just want to sit back and get the stability of the floor and then use a sweep. And I find like when you get a good sweep, I'm sure you understand it if you're a second degree black belt, but there's few things as satisfying, right? It's like that big sweep.
Yeah. Yes, because they've just spent all this time trying to pass your guard, and you're like, okay, now it's my turn. You're on top, and the payback is always kind of a
For
bitch.
sure.
I agree with you. I think that the top game should be emphasized, but I've noticed that I like bottom game, and I'm not much of a bottom game finisher, more of a sweep guy, get on top. But the main thing that I try to instill in my students is the fact that they shouldn't forget that the root of this art is fighting. So, specializing in things that can be countered by a stomp to the face is probably not a good idea, because most people, at least a good portion of why they train, is for self-defense. And I think that you can, if you don't keep the mindset that this is ultimately about being in a fight, that it's easy to get drawn into really strange positions. And then as soon as you say incorporate the drill of grapple boxing, you realize how far you've gone from the actual fighting aspect. So if you put that back in, people tend to get a little more cautious with their hands and where the other person's hands are. But the guard, I totally agree with you. Like, wearing somebody down is really important, because I've got some big dudes. I've got an offensive line coach that trains with me. He was a state champion wrestler in Kentucky, and he's like 400 pounds. And he's so and I train, I brawl with this guy. I mean, he just started, but he's still, it's a big human, and he's very strong. So I really have to try to wear him down, because he can power clean me and kill me probably if I don't be
That's
careful. So I'm
smart.
always, trying to work on that. I think the biggest thing is just maintaining an aggressive and offensive mindset when possible, even in the, because you can make you can be a you can be passive. A passive guard is not very good. An aggressive guard, where you're forcing them, where you're always threatening to stand back up or put them on their back. I think the main thing is that maintaining initiative is the critical part.
That's an interesting. I understand your reasoning. I actually have a different perspective at the moment. Like I'm what I think you'd probably classify as a counter-attacking player, and that's because I find that being aggressive. Actually, like first of all, my jiu-jitsu is very good because I've been training for a long time. So with all but the best players, I can pull this off. If a super high-level guy and I train, that this doesn't work because their offense is just too good. But like, what I do is I just let the guy attack, and usually he makes a mistake, and I capitalize on that attack with the mistake with a counter. And I find for me that's a very energy efficient way to play at the moment, because being aggressive and on the offensive all the time, I find is a huge energy burden. And man, at 38, it's harder and harder to do that. I mean, sometimes if like I have to turn it on for whatever reason, then I'll go flat out on the offensive. But most of the time, I mean, often now I just let the dude take my back because my back escapes are so good. I know I'm going to escape to. It's a kind of a lazy style of grappling, but I get what you're saying, dude. It's like,
I think, but I think that's if I mean, if I can cut in for a second, I'd still think that's an offensive game, because it's just a different kind of offense. I mean, you're setting up an ambush. I mean, a guy who takes the time to run up and set up a sniper hide so that he can blast a dude when he walks across the path. I mean, that's still offensive. I mean, you still have the initiative, even though he thinks he does, because that your game is solid and you're waiting for him to do something, but you're waiting for him to do something on with a purpose. You're not just responding to him. Because you kind of know, you're sort of feeding him things that you're going to positions you can get out of into a good position. And I would see that as sort of a still an offensive game.
I never thought about it that way. I appreciate that. That's given me, I just put a smile on my face. That's very cool. Thank you, Brian. So Brian, let's take the conversation back to Iceland, if you don't mind. It's funny enough, it's a place I've always wanted to go as well. I've been fascinated with it since the 2008 subprime mortgage crisis, when I don't know if you know, but it played a big role. There was a lot of bad debt in those Icelandic banks, which I mean, I had a close friend who it was a very wealthy man, and we worked for Deutsche Bank, and he was heavily leveraged and invested in Iceland, and he lost a lot of money. And I started to research Iceland a little bit, and it's a pretty fascinating place from what I can read. What was it like being there?
It was, well, I don't suggest it was warm or relatively warm here. I went in March and I thought, well, it's spring, I'll go in March. Well, it's not so warm there. I wouldn't recommend going in March. So actually, I'm going to go back this year with some with a my wife and I are going to go back over. We actually got engaged in Iceland, so that was kind of a neat thing. So we're going to go back over. We went over in 2009 when that sort of banking crisis was going on, and people were like, be careful, and all this other stuff about, because the news blows things out of proportion, the media, and there were no like, but there's like a couple people protesting by hitting like pots with a spoon or something. You know what I mean? It was like I wasn't like in fear for my life or anything. It was actually just a really cool place. The people were really friendly. I don't speak any Icelandic, so but I mean pretty much everybody speaks English. Maybe some old fishermen that still speak Old Norse or something living on the, but other than that, it's a really good time. I'd met a couple of people, I guess, online, and they were great hosts at Mjolnir. Going to go back and visit because I know they've built a whole lot of new things. I did like I was I'd gotten my black belt. This was in 2009, so I taught like a little kind of workshop seminar just while I was over there. And those guys took us out, my wife and I, or my girlfriend at the time, and showed us around town, and we got to do some different things. So I'm gonna try to push it a little further and go rent snowmobiles and
Nice.
Magnus for Magnus, and because everything is so close, such a small place, you can fly to Greenland really like on a day trip, like a little, just hop over there. So we'll probably do that, just have a good time. It's kind of neat that the geothermal energy powers everything to
Oh,
the
really?
point to actually, co yeah, they cost. I mean, it's coal, and they actually have to cool down the water. So it costs almost nothing to heat your house and get hot water. They have to actually cool it down so it doesn't like melt you when it comes out of the faucet.
Damn, that's wild.
It's
That's wild.
really, really neat. And then the Blue Lagoon was kind of a neat place. It was like we drove this, or we rode on a bus out to where this big spa was, and it looks like the surface of the moon. And that's actually where they filmed parts of Apollo 13,
And
because it looks like. Yeah, exactly, right. Of
the
course.
moon landing. Cool.
But the Blue Lagoon was kind of neat because we were sitting there and the water was like really hot. It was snowing on us at the same time because we were outside. It's
Oh, that
just
must
a.
have been amazing. That must have been
It
absolutely
is.
amazing.
You definitely should go.
Yeah, it's on my list, man. It's definitely on my list. So, Brian, we had a gentleman on the show maybe 10 episodes back. You might know him. His name is Daniel Strauss, and he's one of the UK's top submission grapplers and jiu-jitsu players. And Daniel Strauss has a great interest in strength and conditioning training. And most of his, I mean, he's a phenomenally strong kid. Most of his strength and conditioning comes from, he developed his understanding in a very organic way, and he uses a lot of old time strength training protocols. Like, he does bending of nails and spikes and like grip challenges and lifting barrels and just these very interesting, slightly more arcane types of strength and conditioning. And it's my understanding from looking at your bio that you have a slightly more what's the word I'm looking for? Modern isn't the right word, but that's what I'm trying to say. You have a slightly more modern set of qualifications, or you have a set of qualifications surrounding more modern strength and conditioning routines. And I wanted to know a little bit about what you would suggest for as complements to grappling training for becoming conditioned and preventing injury.
Sure. Well, so basically my background in strength and conditioning is that's actually my regular job. My full-time job is I'm an exercise physiology instructor at college. So I have a PhD in exercise physiology. And I have a master's, and I used to be a strength coach for a little while and a personal trainer. So I come from it, from a scientific perspective. That said, when I the practice of it is not is more of an more of an art, I think, than a science. So I actually really enjoy. I'm not one who quibbles over percentages. I do big lifts, bench, squat, deadlift, press, power clean, pull up, stuff like that. And I use a lot of kettlebells and just and the odd lifts, the old stuff is great for training for unusual positions that you would find in grappling. So, as far as my routine, kind of personally, I know I stick with just fundamental barbell lifts supplemented by odd lifts and then just a lot of grappling. I do a lot of jumping rope for conditioning. A lot of kettlebell swing rounds, things like that, or just pushing it really hard on drills that are not necessarily full grappling, where I'm allowed to rest. It's like escape the bottom, escape the bottom, escape the bottom, escape the bottom. So your prize for getting out is to get pinned again, which is really, especially something like scarf hold. It's amazingly fatiguing.
Yeah, tell me
So.
about it. Yeah, that's tough.
Just over and over. So that's kind of where I am with the whole grappling, strength training. I think there's a lot of different ways you can do it, a lot of different things that work. That's just what I think. Some of it is finding something that you'll do, and that's interesting. The best, the what I tell when and what I told clients when I was a personal trainer is that provided that you're not fundamentally breaking any major protocols, like as far as training, like you're overloading yourself, you're giving yourself recovery time, and it's specific to what you're trying to do. Provided you kind of do that and you don't injure yourself, then the best program is the one that you're actually going to do. Because I see these people write these crazy programs for other people and then they just sit in the drawer. And I mean, you're better off doing something than nothing. So you have to kind of keep it interesting as well. So I kind of bounce around and learn, the Indian clubs, for instance. I use those a lot for shoulder endurance and to warm up my shoulders. And right now, I last almost a year ago, I tore my bicep on my right arm, which has put me in to rehab mode. So I'm sort of climbing back up on my lifts gradually. And I've had to grapple for 4.5 months with just one arm, so I learned a lot of cool things
Damn, that
about how
must have really improved your jiu-jitsu. Wow.
it really did. I learned. I mean, I just went full bore. I just tucked my other arm in my belt and told people not to take it easy on me, or I'd just smack them in the head if they did. And so like they didn't, and they crushed my face. And I said, just don't pull this arm out of my belt, and I'm cool. I don't care what else you do to me. And I learned some really interesting lessons about body position and about how little in some cases you actually need to use your other arm if you position your body right for defense to take away the angles on people. So there's a lot of cool things that came out of it. I tried to find a silver lining because it was pretty miserable, I'll be honest with you.
I mean, that sounds like your jiu-jitsu already improved a lot, but truth be told, if you're a real man, you would have put both hands in your belt.
Oh, I do that sometimes. I just don't want to have to for 3 months.
Brian, my man, what a pleasure talking to you. I really enjoyed that conversation. If the people listening find themselves in Kentucky or want to come visit Kentucky and train with you, or they just want to learn a little bit more about you, where should they go?
You can go to valhallaacademy.com. It's two A's, so it's Valhalla Academy, one word, but two A's together. So it kind of, when you type it in, and it's in, we're in Frankfort, Kentucky. We love to have visitors come through. We're a relatively small but very vibrant gym in the sense that we have a lot of people that visit from out of town, and we always have a good solid class of people willing to roll, and everybody's got a great attitude. So I have a YouTube channel as well. I need to put some more content on it, but it's got a lot of videos, techniques, me talking. It's more about my philosophy if anybody's interested. It's Valhalla Academy. Just go to YouTube and check that out.
Awesome. Brian, my man, Godspeed in the land of the Vikings, and I will chat to you again in the future. We will have you on. It sounds like you have a lot more to talk about, and we can do a second show at some point. But until then, keep the faith.
Thanks, Nick. Take care.
It's strange because I've never met Brian in person, but just listening to the way he speaks and listening to those protocols that he uses to prepare himself for jiu-jitsu, I know that he will be a, when I finally do meet the guy, an incredibly tough sparring match. Because even if he didn't train jiu-jitsu and he did all that stuff, he would still be tough as hell. So take into consideration he's a high-level black belt. I mean, that's a recipe for a tough grappler is when you take, I've always said it, there's three key elements or three key ingredients in the formation of an amazing jiu-jitsu athlete, and that is technical knowledge, which is pretty self-explanatory, conceptual knowledge, which is again pretty self-explanatory, and also attributes or high levels of attributes. And that's what this conditioning episode speaks to, is how to improve your attributes. And once you have those three ingredients, it's a recipe for a dangerous grappler, and it's clear Brian has all three, especially the conditioning component, down. Cool, guys. So I hope you enjoyed that show, and please head on over to iTunes and leave a review if you're enjoying the shows in general, and that helps keep us motivated to keep making more. Until next week, peace out.